That's a difficult question for a lot of people to answer, because those of us who know the scripture will start going, well, faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. What does that mean?
I have no idea.
Faith. Well, by grace are you saved through faith, and that of not of yourself. It is a gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. So that's what faith is. Faith is grace for I don't know. Or we go to the definition. We go to the definition of faith. Faith is defined as a belief with strong conviction, firm belief in something for which there's no tangible proof. No tangible proof of your faith. There's nothing that you can see that evidences you have faith. No tangible proof. Faith is just a strong thought. Faith is believing God. Really? I like these moments, because you know what's coming. Here is something that Jesus said to illustrate a point about this issue. He said, for there's no good tree which produces bad fruit, nor on the other hand, a bad tree that produces good fruit. For each tree is known by its own fruit. Men do not gather figs from thorns, nor do they pick grapes from a briar bush. The good man, out of the good treasure of his heart, brings forth what is good. And the evil man, out of the evil treasure, brings forth what is evil. For as his mouth speaks, it speaks from the heart. Now, the good man, out of the good treasure. The use of the word here, treasure, has to do with a repository for things of value. So if there's good treasure in you, then what might that treasure be? I would suggest to you, based on the fact that you know your Father, that there would be the treasure of graciousness, the treasure of compassion, the treasure of patience, loving kindness, truth, gentleness, meekness, faith, love. Now, if these are the treasures in your heart, they should be on display in your life. There should be something about you. Someone was telling me a story just this week that they were exiting a store behind an older woman who was quite frail and obviously diminished in capacity physically, so she was moving with great slowness through the exit area. And she turned to apologize to them for poking along, and they took the time to empathize with her and to acknowledge that in her own life there had been those kinds of challenges, and if it weren't for the grace of God now, I'd be moving slower than you. And she was touched that some stranger would pause to empathize, understand, and encourage. Now, compare that to someone who would brusquely try to get around her. See, there's an element of difference in us that Christ has precipitated because of his presence in us. Now, when we say that there's no tangible proof for your faith, there's a guy who would take strong exception with that. His name is James. He has some very, very straightforward things to say about your faith that has no tangible evidence. Listen to this. What use is it, my brethren, if someone says he has faith, but he has no works? Can that faith save him? Let me take a pot shot at this evangelical notion of the silent witness. Okay? We're just Christians. All we have to do is just be Christians inside our skin. Just be Christians. We don't have to say anything about it. the silent witness. Did you know if people don't know what you represent, they don't know what you're doing? Let's suppose that this morning I had deferred to somebody in a clown costume to come up here and just do mime. Would that be out of context? Okay. He would be doing what he does, but we wouldn't have a clue why he's doing it here. So the notion of being a silent witness doesn't go very far with the Lord. Suppose Jesus had just come and walked around being a silent witness. We'd still be guessing, what was he doing? Can that faith save him? What's the obvious answer to that question? It leads you to the thought, well, I guess not. So he goes on to say this. If a brother or a sister, now remember, last week I mentioned to you that Paul says, do good to all men, but especially to those of the household of faith. James is addressing Christians in his letter. And he says, if a brother or sister is without clothing and in need of daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and filled, and yet you do not give them what is necessary for their body, what use is that? Even so, faith, if it has no works, is dead, being by itself. That is, if you have faith in the living God, and the living God resides in you, there should be some evidence around you that you're not what you used to be. Is that a fair statement? Now, you go into situations, religious situations, where they don't even teach the issue of being born again. You have religious people doing religious things because their religion requires them to do it. Now, one of my dear friends from another location and a different involvement was associated with a congregation of fairly wealthy people who decided to do good to the poor on Thanksgiving. And so they put out their best china, they prepared all this wonderful food, they had actual silverware, and they had crystal drinking glasses, and were very pleased with what they had prepared, and nobody came. Because they don't know any poor. Okay? But they had this religious idea to do good to the poor that they didn't know. That's a statement, folks, a practical expression of being disconnected from the reality of the need in the lives of others. Even so, faith, if it has no works, is dead by itself. And the works are not just your activity and preparation. The works are the delivery to the point of need. Now, one of the reasons, and, you know, I'm kind of like Paul. I'd rather be with the Lord than be here. But as long as I'm here, I want to do what the Lord is doing. And so one of the reasons I let my wife hand me a handful of pills every day, and we don't eat fried food and all that other stuff, is because I'm interested in still being available to take the grace I represent to the place Jesus wants it to go. That's my primary motivation. To honor him in my life. So taking your anointing, your grace, your ability to the point of need is where the life happens, because it's the contact with the need that changes the situation, and you're that point of contact. So he goes into this hypothetical argument. He says, but someone may well say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without the works. What do you have? You have invisible faith. Show me your invisible faith, because it's not doing anything. And I will show you my faith. It's $20 for the children's home in Mukachevo, Ukraine. And if it keeps ringing, you're going to go to hell. Okay. Now, for those of you that didn't get that joke, we showed a little video here not long ago about the different punishments for a cell phone going off in the service. I think it was a Lutheran or Methodist church that produced it. And if it went off during the announcement, there was a certain penalty. And if it went off during the reading of the scripture, but if it went off during the preaching, poof, you went straight to hell. Anybody who is EMT people, or you have a personal crisis that you have to attend to, the $20 doesn't apply to you. That faith without works is useless. You believe that faith without works is invisible faith, and I will show you my faith by my works. Now, he goes on to say, you believe that God is one. What does that statement mean? It's a statement of orthodoxy from Deuteronomy chapter 6. Remember, he's writing to a Jewish audience. They know this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is. That's a statement of orthodoxy. Okay? Now, it's important you understand that to get the rest of the sentence. You believe that God is one, and you do well, but the demons are also orthodox because they believe that God is one, and it causes them to shudder in fear because they know what it means for them. So you can be orthodox and not be of any value. You do well. The demons also believe and shudder. But if you're willing to recognize, you foolish fellow, that faith without works is useless. Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered up Isaac his son on the altar? You see that faith was working with his works, and as a result of the works, faith was perfected and the scripture was fulfilled, which said, and Abraham believed God, and it was his actions were accorded to him as righteousness. Now, I have Hilton Garcia to thank for this thought, and I'll throw it in here because I'm going to play with it in my own devotional life. At Babel, everybody was unified toward their own gods, not the God of their creation. And so at Babel, God says, okay, you want those gods? You can have them. But I'm going to take one man and I'm going to turn this entire thing upside down. He took Abraham and said, in you, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. So think about this for a moment. God gave over the entire human race to their own foolishness, and then decided to take on the entire human race with one person. You know, we sing about this stuff without really getting it. If God is with us, who can stand against us? Okay? But you can hear God singing to Abraham, you and me against the world. And he wins. He wins. We're already over 1/7 of the population, and there's more coming. The rate of Christianity's expansion is accelerating with time, not diminishing. Don't you love how he works? Aren't you glad he didn't pick you to be the one against the world? And he was called the friend of God. You see that a man is justified by his works and not by faith alone. In the same way, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way? For just as the spirit, the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead. 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 Y'all remember that little chicken? Dead. 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 Have you got it yet? Dead. Dead. Now, I want to take a look at some works that we're actually doing. It's things that, our revolution of people, in and out, in the churn that happens all the time, simply means lots of you don't know everything that's going on. And so we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that our Father's house is involved in the nations. Because when you talk about acts of faith, faith that is action, it requires some kind of investiture of you into something outside of you. And in these slides we'll look at, one of the things we're doing is investing in the need, that is, practical faith. Now, for a good many years, we have been supporting Pastor Carlos Jorge. Carlos and his congregation are reaching out to the Gypsy community in their area. There's a large Gypsy community in western Ukraine. So in looking at this slide, here's some of the stuff they've done last year with some of the resources we've been sending them. Take note that they purchased 8 horse carriages of wood and chopped it to serve as firewood. We took it to the houses of 29 widows who live in poverty and have very little. But look at this. By the time we paid them a visit, 3 of the women hadn't had anything to heat up their rooms, and in one house, I saw people burning their clothes in the fire to keep it burning and given some warmth. Now, is that far removed from the life you live? Yes, it is. But what are we doing? We are empowering through relationships the ability to touch these people. I gathered our teenagers and young people, and we made up a list of those people in the camp who never eat more than one meal a day or even less frequently. How often do you go to the pantry and you start nibbling because you don't know what you want? You just want something, and there's plenty there to choose from. We visited 24 families. A lot of the young boys and girls were moved by compassion and cried because of what they saw and could experience. We thank you for your faithfulness to the Lord and for your love for our people. May the Lord bless you and your church abundantly. Now, that's stuff that we're doing as our Father's house. And in my reckoning, Jesus notices these things. Because from last week, when we do this to those, we do it to him personally. Okay. But there are other things we're doing. For instance, some of you will remember, I call him Little Sergey because there's so many Sergeys over there. But Sergey and Luda have relocated from when I first started relating to them. They're now in Lviv, and they have planted 2 churches outside the city and have one in the city. But we appreciate the fact that you're with us in ministry, going through difficult challenges and circumstances. We feel your prayers and God's mercy upon us during this time. We have done many things together. We've also hosted 4 events for them. 2 of them were concert programs, and the other were meeting with vitamin distribution. Who are the them? The them are those who have been displaced from the east because their cities lie in ruin, and they have taken what they could grab and rushed to the west to get away from the war. Along the way, they were threatened. Some were turned back because it is rumored, reported to me, that many of those illegitimate roadblocks are from military persons from another nation wearing civilian clothes pretending to be Ukrainians. Now, in this ministry, we've given 60 food packets and 50 packets of vitamins to people from the east of Ukraine. Many people were very grateful for the food because they don't have any jobs. Their economy is in the toilet. I mentioned to you once, when I first started going there, one American dollar would buy 4 of theirs. One American dollar would now buy 28. Okay? That's serious deflation. Not only that, the political uproar, the the war in the East. I mean, the churches in the West have been buying boots and clothing and blankets for the soldiers because the government can't supply it. Okay? Here, they held Christmas outreaches and gave Christmas gifts to children from about 700 needy families. Okay? This is God's people showing God's love, and we are supporting that process. They are in the thick of it there. Alrighty? In another situation, we're also investing in the future. For instance, you've seen what we have been doing in the Philippines. These photos, some of you have seen before, but they represent us investing in people predominantly under the age of 30. Now, what does that mean? If I'm 66 and they're 30, they're going to live longer than me? Yeah, I'm not shooting for 125. And so what we're doing is we're taking what we have acquired from the Lord in this generation, putting it into the next generation. They will learn as they grow and give it to the next generation. So who knows where all of these folks are going to end up. Cuba, you know a great deal about. Tim and Molly presented these three photo boards out in the lobby, very nicely done, to give you the reminder that we're actually touching the worlds from down here on this little peninsula. Investing in the person becomes our functional faith. Now, I've shared with you already that at this point in my life, I only want to work relationally. Some of you will remember Sasha and Alona coming to visit us. Alona is the sister of Marina, who was my interpreter in the Ukraine early on. She and her husband have devoted themselves to family ministry because families in the Ukraine are in shambles. When I first started going there, there were 500,000 children living on the streets. The churches began to buy apartment buildings and build complexes to bring these kids in off the street. It wasn't that they didn't have parents. Their parents were either alcoholics or drug addicts. Now, Alona and all three of her children have health issues. One has a thyroid that's three times too big. The other has insufficient blood flow to the cranial area. The other one has a heart condition that's going to be lifelong, and she's experiencing endometriosis. But they are giving their lives away to these people. And we help. We help them produce some family-oriented programs. They hold family camps. They've been leading people to Christ. These folks are right there in the thick of it. In addition to these guys, we also work with Bishop Samuel in Kenya. Now, in Kenya, Kenya is a difficult place. Part of my consternation about Kenya is that, and I want to be gracious in saying this, the word of faith people got there, okay? And that's turned into hyper faith. There was a fellow running the circuit here who was with the national figures in that movement, and they were supplying great resources to him, so he had a beautiful home, he had a compound, he had servants, he had multiple cars. And so the other young pastor said, I want to be like that. So they start coming over here to raise money to go back and do that so they can show it pays to follow God. Now, in kindness, let me say this. I understand how poverty shapes your theology. Okay? A prosperity gospel to the poor is a word of welcome. And the principles will work apart from God because they're his principles. But that doesn't mean you move into the generosity of spirit that reflects your relationship to your Father, because you can be born again and still have an orphan mindset. And so you manipulate the principles of God to advance yourself, and you call it maturity. I've been watching this a long, long time. That's Lanny's conclusion. You don't have to buy it. I'm not mad at anybody. I just think there's a discrepancy in a lot of ways at what's being taught and acted upon. So when you find a man like Samuel, who, any of you remember meeting Samuel? He's just a delightfully free guy. In this village, where you see that church reflected, there's no money in rural communities. If you built a church there, there'd be no offerings. Nobody wants to go there. So Samuel goes and establishes a church. In other situations, where you have no electricity, no running water, no television, no grocery stores, no pension plans, and no doctors, you see the stunning wasting and underweight that's happening to these children because they're malnourished and living in great poverty. In another scenario, our own Tim was able to work with Bishop Samuel to create microloans. Do y'all know what those are? Little bitty amounts of money at very low interest rate to help those who have an entrepreneurial spirit begin to move up. It's not that they don't have a work ethic. They have no resources. Brian will tell you the stories of being in their homes and sitting on the dirt floors. That's the level of poverty in which we're investing. One of the interesting things about this, you know, I keep telling you guys, when the Lord has a situation he wants to address, he doesn't send a committee, he sends a person. So Brian was over there and he began to relate to this school where they had no pencils, no paper, no chalk for the chalkboards, no textbooks. Most everything was oral communication with these children. So as he began to haul backpacks of materials over there, and asking the Lord, what can we do? He ends up on an airline flight, seated next to a person who represents an organization that supplies textbooks where there are no textbooks. You do what you can do, and God will do what only He can do. So now the school has textbooks. If you'll step out, God will step up. And you find yourself truly being a co-laborer together with the Lord. Now, after years of caring and helping by Samuel and his fellowship, the elders in Guragura are persuaded the community would be served to have a church there. Samuel has been given a plot of land to build a church. They have most of the materials. They now need funding of $500 for the masonry work to start. Those kids in the center picture are leaving their school because they don't have $2 to pay for the exam. Not uncommon. These 32 were spared. Samuel pays their fees plus supplies, uniforms, shoes, and meals. That's another 50 or so children left out in the need, and it costs $20 to $40 per semester. Brian and Marilyn have been working this for a long, long time, so they already have children who graduated from high school and are entering college. They didn't have a hope. God sent a person. You ever get waylaid by your emotions? I feel very deeply about some of these things because here we are trying to figure out how to scrape another $50 into our IRA. Faith is not mental assent. Faith is action. Because it's an outward demonstration of the treasure God has put on deposit in you. And in spite of the cynicism that can thwart our compassion and generosity, if we will move through trusted relationships, we can be assured we're partnering with the Lord in what He's doing within our sphere of contact. And I'm not saying don't give to international organizations that you don't know anything about. I'm not saying that. But do check them out, see if they're doing what they say they're doing. But for me and the remainder of my life, I'm going to work through the relational connections that we have because I know these people. I know their spirit. I know their heart. I know their effectiveness. Faith is your inner treasure demonstrated in your outward actions. Now, the point of these last two messages is this. The need always seems to be greater than the supply. I'm asking you to consider before the Lord if you should be involved in supporting some of these works. I don't care which country it is or what particular project it is. I want you to settle before the Lord if you should be involved in the stuff that's actually going on in the earth that we can personally influence and stand up in partnership before the Lord on those things. Now, not calling for an appeal today, But Tim is going to lead us through communion. And as you come to the communion table, there are two items here. One is a form where you can decide if and when and for how long you're willing to give anything to any of these projects. Just say, Kenya, Cuba, Philippines, wherever else we're going. And these baby bottles, take them home and fill them up. If pennies is all you have, then fill them up with pennies. But Tim would prefer 20s. Because this is how we help support the rescuing of babies in the womb. All righty. Timothy?